This is Dana Eggert and Debbie Baird for Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, on February 28, 1977, interviewing Mrs. Philip Hoffman, Side 3. First, Mrs. Hoffman, there are a few specific dates from our last meeting that we didn't record, and if we could get those, we could start with that. The date, approximate date that your sister was born.
My sister?
Mm-hmm. In
1899.
Okay. And the date that your parents died, that you said that...
My father in 1950 and my mother in 51.
And the date that your husband died?
1968.
Okay. Now, let's talk about your children, their lives. First of all, you have two daughters?
I have two girls, Marilyn and Carol.
And can you tell us a little bit about how they grew up in Pittsburgh?
They had pretty much of a normal, average childhood. We always had our home, rather, I always tried to make our home the center for children. That whether it was any form of holiday or festival of any kind. We always had Halloween parties for all the children and try to use a theme around it and create activities all around the home, and as far as their friends were concerned, they all gathered at our place.
Could you just briefly tell me when each of them was born?
One was born in 37 and one in 40.
And a little bit about their lives today. Are they, either one of them, particularly involved in community organizations?
It turned out that the one that had started out being involved in community wound up becoming a career woman in business.
That's Marilyn.
And that's Marilyn. While she still has her certain inclination, she's very attracted and supportive of the Jewish National Federal Fund, Jewish Home and Hospital for Age, of which she was president of the Ladies Auxiliary and Dinner Dance Chairman, until her giving it up to go into business full time, but she still feels it a very worthy cause. She's supportive of UJF and has never in any way shirked or passed the buck of what her responsibility is to her fellow Jews. And Carol, who at one time she was, Carol was quite different. She didn't seem to be really community-oriented to a great extent. She had very definite feelings about things. But as time went on, she became involved with the United Jewish Federation, and through that, through Kenny's involvement in hers, was where they became attracted to Israel.
Can you tell us, both of your daughters are married, can we just have...
Marilyn is married to Joe Radner, and they have four sons.
Mm-hmm. Their names?
And Stephen is the oldest, Richard is next, David and Stuart is the youngest. Nine, going on 19.
Mm-hmm.
And Carol's married to Ken Elias, and they have three sons. Craig, the eldest, Michael, and Jed.
Could you kind of briefly give us a contrast in the way that you were brought up and the way that you brought up your children, and any specific reasons for any differences, if there were any?
Well, I can't... compare, really, the way I was brought up and the way they were brought up, but I suppose that, too, is pretty much the story of the generations and of immigrant children from immigrant parents to children from American-born parents. There was no question about it that in my growing up, I personally, I almost think that I had more freedom than I gave my children. And this is very interesting. I was a middle child. I had this older sister who was considerably older than I was, and she was born in Europe and had always had a... she just wasn't sure of herself. My brother was a year younger than I was, and unfortunately my parents had lost a pair of twin boys in Europe very young. So when my brother was born, you know, in the Jewish custom, that it was the apple of their eye, and just like he was the apple of their eye, that's how pathetically any illness that anyone talked about, before it even came out of their mouth, he was sick. And as such, in my very young life, I found myself having to, whether I felt sorry for my mother or what, but I had to act as a buffer and just be independent and stoic, and that I was never sick, and I made no demands and did anything. I was headstrong, but I did it for peace. I was always concerned about my brother and always knew that I never wanted to be as whiny as my sister. And with my children, first of all, my mother, Lord knows, never had the free time to devote to us, to participate with us, whether it was in brownies or Sunday school, or we had home festivities. But other than that, family festivities to go to visit other family. Whereas with my children, I was very much a part of their life. Whether if there was a trip the school was going on, I always volunteered to drive. If they were going on an overnight, I would be the first to volunteer to go to take them, to make sure I knew where this place is, and the next day go back and get them. And it's amazing because here in recent days, when I see, naturally I'm not with Carol as much, so I can't say, and their life in Israel is totally different. But here with Marilyn and the boys, that very often I'll say to her, aren't you coming down pretty hard on them? She said, look, Mother, if I didn't know what I got away with, they probably get away with it too. And I suppose it was pretty much the same, that I felt I was putting something over on my mother at times, that I would be upset, thought I was being up to what they were doing. And in general, they had much more opportunities for expansion of interests of travel, and in their very young days, the fact that my family was in New York, and I have this one brother whom I'm very close with. I'm close with my sister too, but the age difference and her children were so different. But my brother has two children who were within the ages of mine. As a matter of fact, through Carol, his daughter is married to a Sabra living in Haifa and has a baby in Haifa. So now we're both in the same boat. And it's been that way pretty much all our lives, so that even after the girls started going to camp, the moment they get picked up from camp, slam it. Thanks. The moment they get picked up, so Sometimes we'd even come home and leave the dirty laundry, but otherwise we'd drive right on to New York and spend time with them.
Could you please tell us about the religious observances in your home when your children were growing up?
Well, as I mentioned before, I was inclined, and I still am, to the traditional orthodoxy. I still keep a kosher home. And holidays were traditionally observed. Naturally, I must say, nothing as far as our personal life, it was nowhere near as strict as it was at home with my family. But they knew the difference between every day and the Sabbath. And they did go to Sunday school, which I don't know how much of a background it really gave them. Then they did take some Hebrew lessons. But on the whole, I would say that even if they are not what you would call reared, let me say, in the intellectual part of Judaism, the philosophies and all, I think they did get a definite feeling of knowing they were Jews, first, last, and always.
What was your affiliation? What temple?
Well, we were members of the Beth Shalom, and I still am.
Aren't you on the board of Rosh Hashanah?
No. Never belonged to the Rosh Hashanah. I was on the board of the Beth Shalom, senior board. And Marilyn and Joe were affiliated with Temple Sinai. And Carol was, too. She was affiliated with both Temple Sinai and Beth Shalom. Mm-hmm. Carol, by instinct and by nature, could be a traditional Jewess.
When did you first go to Israel?
Our first trip was with my brother and his wife and my husband and myself. We were in April of 61.
Can you kind of recall your feelings of seeing the country? I know you're very involved with...
Well, I was involved, but I'll be very honest with you. In no way did I get the reaction. And this was very amazing. My husband was not too well at that time already. And it was with great trepidation. And that, ironically, Carol was the one that talked him into going. But, and even my brother, who is knowledgeable, and he's a traditional Jew, the impact on my husband was the most fantastic reaction. First of all, he was raised in Europe and went to yeshivas, but their synagogue, that in fact all his studies until he went on to gymnasia, which was like a prep school, was all around the synagogue. And he lived in the age of the first roots of Zionism was being sown in Russia. And when he was in gymnasia, he later told me, they used to smuggle these pamphlets to the students, and they'd hide in barns. And he says how they didn't set them on fire, he'll never know, because they would have to use candlelight to read them. And if they thought any one of their parents were coming, they'd have to take and burn the pamphlets, not to be caught. Hmm. Well, it was totally against the Tsarist Russia. And then, of course, he says the study of deep Talmud and Tanakh and the Bible and all. And when he got to Israel, all as he grew up and came to the States, that a lot of the things typical of humans, he started doubting that it was just a lot of history and anyone could do this. And when he got to Israel and he was reliving his studies and that it was not something made up, that the impact on him was absolutely tremendous.
That's great. And the impact on you didn't happen until subsequent trips more?
The impact on me was, let me put it, it was always a case of knowing out of the Haggadah about Lashon HaRabah B'Yerushalayim of next year in Jerusalem. And of course my father was kept the dream of Jerusalem very much alive. My mother and father, while they were not people of means, in their later years, through my brother, who too was not an affluent man, but nevertheless he was a kind that anything that he thought was something he or his parents could be interested in, he would not wait for tomorrow but get it for them today. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with television in New York. And before anyone else could even dream of a television set, he already had one. And it would be a case where I'd call my folks every Sunday morning in those days. And I'd ask, well, how are you? What's good? And there was my mother on the phone saying, you said about falling asleep. She said, I am so tired. I am so exhausted. I said, but Mama, why? She said, don't ask. I was in Madison Square Garden last night. I was in Philadelphia watching wrestling. She said, I'm exhausted. And this was her traveling through television, mm-hmm. participating. So what I, to bring it back to the point, that when my father wrote me a letter of his exhilaration of the United Nations declaring Israel as a state and having a homeland, and then when Ben Gurion actually declared it a state, of his writing saying that he lived long enough to see our Jews have a homeland dancing in the streets of Jerusalem, mm-hmm. on the television. And then right after that, that was 48, mm-hmm. he died in 50, so he was ailing, and it was a case where he very much wanted to migrate to Israel to die there. But my mother was a more realistic woman, and I think a lot of Jewish women are. And her answer to her was, look, I know I feel just what you feel, but she said, our children are here. You want to go? She said, that I can't stop you, but I'm going to remain, and whatever happens, my children know where I am. They can, whether they want to meditate or what, they can find me. Mm-hmm. And they both remained here. And evidently somewhere, I know when I go, every time I go to see Carol and all, I can't think that he planted that seed.
Did you take, did you take many trips through Europe at all?
Well, on that trip, we had been to Rome and Zurich and to Paris. And, of course, it was we did go to Rome first, and it was shocking to see the debris and the broken windows as the aftermath. The war had ended in 45, and this was in 61, that they did so little to in any way clean up. And of course the extreme of going to that Sistine Chapel of the wealth in that Catholic church and then to see poverty, mm-hmm. right under their nose, it's something that I can't accept, that's all. And getting to Israel, too, at that time, seeing them trying to build homes. Of course, Tel Aviv was a very, how would you call it, an anachronism or something. And to this day, 16 years later, whenever I go to Tel Aviv, I think of Broadway and 42nd Street, it's New York transplanted. Mm-hmm. Whereas Jerusalem is a total different feeling. You feel the feeling of eternity, internationalism, languages of all sorts, people of all walks. And no matter how they try to modernize it, and some of the architecture is getting a little way out, at least in my way of feeling, but it still has a certain somberness, a certain depth to it. It's hard to explain. Of course, Haifa, I find, a very metropolitan city. As I've said to Carol time and again, if I ever settled in Israel, I would prefer living in Haifa. It's more the kind of a happy medium for someone like myself. Of course, these developing towns, I remember in 61 when we were in Beersheba, that was the end of the line. And there had been the first community center built. But the access to the community center was deep in sand. That, we were constantly, we finally wound up taking our shoes off and walking without shoes because we got to be so, such a nuisance to get the sand in your feet. And to come in there now is just when one stops to think in the short time with the problems, what is going on there, the mind cannot really accept it.
It's an incredible country. Can you kind of give us an idea of how you feel about Carol and Kenny living in Israel and also about the difference in their life there and what they...
Well, as far as Carol and Kenny living in Israel, I have to admit, and I did that to her, that if I was her age, I was their age as she and Kenny, and it was a family decision to do, I think I would transplant myself. Of course, it might have been for an entirely different reason or what, and I might have lived differently. But as far as their living there, they're very comfortable with the type of life. And after all, fortunately, they were able to choose it. It wasn't forced on them. And they still have options, which unfortunately so many others in Israel do not. There's a big difference.
Why?
Because for the simple reason that you go ahead and you take these people that came from Yemen, and from Pakistan, and from there, this is the end of the line for them. They have no way of going anywhere else. And even some of the Russians, or any of the others, or the those that were saved from the Holocaust, or these families that have been in Israel since the turn of the century. After all, Israel became a state in 48. But actually, building families and building, which on kibbutzim at all, this started in the end of the 19th century. Where Carol lives in Rosh Pina is the oldest town in what is now known as Israel. And it was actually established in 1891. And there are families who have raised several generations since then. And as a matter of fact, the house that Carol lives in, the access road to come up, if you come up her front stairs, that's the original road to Damascus. Mm. For the carts and the donkeys to go through. So they live a very, what you would call an unstructured life. It's very casual, and of course, living, the climate itself, you have to admit that it's desert tropical climate, even though they're up in the mountains. But the climate, I know with myself, the climate itself, there are a lot of things that you think, oh, it should be done differently. But you really can't make too many changes